wish I could break free back to where I'm supposed to be.
Welcome to the Sickle to Noise podcast on the ProSound Web Podcast Network. I'm Chris Leonard, joined by, well, 2 weeks in a row here, it's just me. Kyle and Sam are still on tour, and that's okay. Actually, Kyle is visiting Fall Out Boy tonight in Chad Oleg, so shout out to Chad and the Fall Out Boy as he gets to reunite with his old tour. That's going to be fun. I'm going to try to catch Chad when he's in town in a few weeks. We'll see what happens. And Sam's out with Volbeat, so if you happen to see Volbeat in town, go catch up with Sam. If you see Max on tour, go catch up with Kyle. So anyway, also a special thank you to our sponsors, Alan and Heath, Rational Acoustics, and RCF. They are all great people, great partners, great products. I encourage you to check all of them out, and we appreciate their support. So tonight, I have Michael Diaz, who I've been wanting to get on for a while, just like everyone we want to have on here. We want to get on for a while, and we, you know, stars align, and we figure things out. Currently, he is the, dang it, I lost. What's your title at iAmito?
I'm the executive director.
The executive director of iAmito. You're also the VP of sales at Earthworks. We'll come back to what iAmito is. And then formerly, you were with Ultimate Ears, Logitech for quite some time as well. So welcome, Mike.
Chris, thank you so much for having me, and a special shout out and a thank you to your sponsors who enable this great show. What you do for the community really means a lot to everybody. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. So here's where, we have a couple places I want to go tonight. There'll be a lot of focus on in-ear monitors. So specifically, let's start there. What's the first time you heard the phrase in-ear monitors?
Oh, this is a great story. So let's clear some air first before we get here. I am not a sound engineer, and I know that this is a show dedicated to sound engineers. So when it comes to signal to noise, I'm more of the noise side of it, right? I've always worked on the sales and marketing. I've always worked on the sales and marketing side for manufacturers. And while I'm not a sound engineer, I play one on TV. All of my best friends are. And I really made a life and a career of taking care of sound engineers, of monitor engineers specifically. And so the first time I heard of in-ear monitors was I was recruited to write the business plan for Mindy and Jerry Harvey at Ultimate Ears when they were still selling ears out of the back of a tour bus. I knew their intellectual property attorney. And he pulled me aside. He's like, hey, I've got a client I want you to meet, and I want you to write their business plan. They're in the middle of a giant lawsuit right now. They have a technology that can blow up if they end up holding the IP. And you're the guy for it. And I said, no, dude, I'm not the guy for it. I'm your landscaper. I'm not the guy to write the business plan for your client. He says, no, trust me. This is all going to work out. And I was young and I was dumb and I went along with it. And I've never had, to this day, had such imposter syndrome, but I put on my best suit that did not fit. And I go to the top of the Stratosphere. The Stratosphere in Vegas has just been built. And I meet Mindy for lunch up there with the attorney. And I am incredibly nervous. And Mindy turns to me maybe 5 minutes into the sit down. And she says, hey dude, relax a little bit. A lot of my clients, you know, were at a lunch and they nod off a little bit and duck over to the bathroom to take care of themselves. And Chris, that didn't make me feel any better. That didn't make me feel any better at all. But we hit it off. We really get on. She explains to me what they're doing, what they need. And then she puts me in touch with Jerry so he can give a download. And at the same time, I kind of become a ghostwriter for Jerry. And he publishes a lot of articles in Live Sound International and a few of the other trade mags. This is when Marty was still like trying to tell everybody that he owns the trademark on the in-ear monitor term. And that nobody even really had a name for what these were at the time. And yeah, it it really worked that way. I like that movie, Almost Famous. I had a side stage vantage to watching this industry start, blow up, and explode to what it is today.
Hmm. That's interesting. So when, what has it been like to see the infancy of that and to explode? What has that journey been like for you specifically?
Well, I think it's fantastic for a lot of reasons. The first is I don't want to dive too much into the benefits of in-ears. All of your audience knows what those are, but you have to think about this for a second, that there was a world before in-ears existed when it was just wedges. And you have to think about the way that music was changing and imagine doing today, click and track and hitting all the sequences without ears. Imagine doing all your TV promo without ears. And imagine the hearing loss that people, that musicians, performers would have suffered if not for in-ears, right? So in-ears absolutely changed the way that people tour, changed the way that people perform, and changed the way, the workflow that engineers do their job. That's not the most exciting or interesting part from my vantage point. From my vantage point, in-ear monitors are like the McLaren race cars of the industry, the Formula One, like the best of the best, where the technology that is developed on stage, practiced and rehearsed into the toughest environments, then explodes and radiates out from the center. And I would argue that every move you've seen in the last 5-10 years into the global headphone revolution, into the true wireless movement, into the AirPods and beyond, all of that originated from the from in-ear monitors. And you can draw a very clear lineage from the technology and from the use cases. And I think that's fantastic. So to me, I love where pro audio meets consumer electronics. And I don't think that that's that different in just talking about this for in-ear monitors. I think you see this with all of the gear and all the manufacturers, with microphones, you name it across the board. To me, this is why the sound engineers are the unsung heroes of this untold story, and why music matters so much in the world, not just for manufacturers looking to be associated with the lifestyle of top touring bands and artists and for their marketing cachet, but for the testing grounds of proving out new tools and new technology that make everybody's life better.
That's fascinating. So I think everything you just said there, you know, points to something I wanted to talk about, is that the last time you and I saw each other, you were working on trying to document, you know, this story, if you will. So I got to see you out at NAMM. And I know you're working on a project and let you talk about it. And, I happened to get to sit in the back for a little bit and there happened to be a little special guest, sitting there. That was,
you don't have to play cagey and you didn't just come and sit with me. You kind of saved my arse. So let's be honest. You filled in and subbed and delivered some real hits on that. But yeah, you want to talk about it and then I'll hop in and tell you the backstory with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we've obviously have been talking, behind the scenes for quite some time, specifically with like How We Got Loud, and the history, which is, for those who don't know, I had started a whole series about the history of live sound and things like that, and obviously the evolution of in-ear monitors is part of that. And so we've kind of talked about, you know, some of that stuff, and I have a passion for knowing and I'm all, you know, knowing about that history. And I've also obviously, you know, saw the transition of wedges to ears and was a part of that whole process. You had texted me before NAMM and you're like, hey, we're working on this thing, you know, don't really know what it is yet, but working on this thing, trying to, for lack of better terms, thread the needle of the storyline of how in-ear monitors came to be and how the effect it's had on both pro audio and consumers and the whole nine yards. And you're like, there might be a special guest. So, you know, make sure you come by. I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah. And I thought I was going to come by and watch, you know, some other people tell their story, which I did. And then you're like, hey, you want to, you know, jump on the mic? I'm like, yeah, sure.
I'll talk about a Huck meanwhile, fan. You didn't even know you were going to be on the mic? Yes.
I mean, you know, you had alluded to, hey, maybe we'll get you on the mic. You know, I'm like, all right, whatever. Like, you know, like, meanwhile, I know you're interviewing people who are like, are the people, you know, like Jerry or Marty or whoever, people who have, like, you know, the actual pioneers, not just a, you know, schmuck audio guy who happened to do ears, you know, for a couple people and cares about our history. So I didn't know about that degree. And then, so I come into the room and Steve Wozniak happens to be sitting in the room and I'm like, holy shit.
Best boom operator I've hired yet.
Oh, man. So it was, so I'm just like sitting behind Steve Wozniak, you know, and like Steve's like sitting there, like, you know, listening to all this. And I'm like, first off, I didn't know the correlation as to why freaking Steve Wozniak is even in the room. And then like, you want to get up here? And I'm like, yeah, I got to tell my story in front of freaking Steve Wozniak. But the cool thing is y'all needed a break. And I got to hang out with Steve for like 20 minutes or so and like ask him a bunch of personal questions. And, but now I maybe have you tell, like, first off, A, what were you working on? Two, why was Steve there? And I think it's pretty cool as to why Steve was even there.
Yeah. So,
or the why.
There's two things there's two things that you and your audience need to know, Chris. One, I've seen a lot of things and I'm, and I'm lucky because I have a very neutral attitude about it all, right? I don't think in terms of manufacturers and competition. We're all in this together, and I have earned a reputation for being fair and accurate and just amongst all the manufacturers. Two, I like to drink and run my lip a lot and talk a lot of trash. And these two character traits lead me into a lot of situations in hot water. And I have always joked and threatened about putting this documentary together. I alluded to it earlier in saying this kind of idea of Almost Famous and being able to watch this explosion, because it wasn't just an explosion of in-ears, it was an explosion of culture. You have to think about the way that music is performed, but also the way that music is consumed during this last 15 years, last 20 years. We went from buying physical discs, physical units of music, to being able to stream anything we want, anytime, anywhere, on the devices that went first from the portable, like Windows CE platform, Palm Pilots, Rios, to the first iPod, to the iPhone, and to where we are right now, right? So not only was I dealing with all of the manufacturers and all the sound engineers, but on any given week, I'd be in multiple cities taking out buyers from Apple, Best Buy, Radio Shack, Costco, you name it, backstage to see their favorite performers live using in-ears and kind of connecting the dots between everything, right? So during this giant explosion and during all of this, it became readily apparent to me that I was witnessing history in the making. I wouldn't say that I was part of history in the making. I might have had my finger or two on a bit of the pulse or pulling some of the strings, but I really got to watch and see all the people who were responsible for this. And the truth of it all, Chris, is that they're all crazy. They're all the weirdest cast of characters you could ever put together. And they all hate each other. Okay.
For the record, I've seen some of this behind the scenes as well. So I can attest to that.
They don't just hate each other. It's like a dysfunctional giant family where they're all joined at the hip, all fighting for the same thing. And yet they all love each other too, okay? Mm. So everybody claims to be the first one to have invented it, or everyone claims to do this, or claims to have this artist or that. And everybody talks so much trash about the other behind their backs and to their faces that it's one of my favorite sports just to sit back and to relax and watch it and maybe just kind of lob one or two out there to see to see who bites. And it's hilarious, right? Because the truth is, they are all responsible for moving the needle, moving the culture, and bringing us to where we are today. None of this would have happened without the contributions of all players included. But nobody can see that, and nobody can say that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
for the record, that's also true not only in ear monitors. I think you and I talked about this a little bit, like in in the short amount of time that I did spend deep diving into, you know, the history of live sound thing. Like there are, there's three or four people who claim to have been the first to do foldback wedges or the first snake or the first whatever. And because we're talking like pre-internet times and communication was reduced. Sure, there was often multiple people trying these things at the exact same time, and that eventually, once that person made it across the coast, and then you see this, that, and the other. So that's a common thread just in our niche industry in and of itself.
It absolutely is. There's so many parallels into how these are all interconnected, right? And so it really is the work of the entire industry, and of forces outside of our industry. Again, the contribution that Apple made to this, the contribution that Real Networks made to this with streaming platform development, right? We could even say the contribution that Napster made to this and the contribution of society choosing to devalue music in a certain way, which here's what's ironic. As music becomes ubiquitous and a commodity based on streaming, in-ears in fact become more relevant because more tour dates and livelihood and generation of revenue from tour support goes up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Maybe the reason that in-ears are so used around the world right now, and there's more than 300 manufacturers at this time and space, is because of all of the other factors that make in-ears part of the global revolution. But so anyway, I always joked, especially because as I became friendly with each player, I could hear their truth, and they were each 100% right. Okay? Jerry's version of the story is absolutely correct. And Mead for Metamodic's version is absolutely correct. And even Stephen Ambrose. Well, maybe not that. But everybody's version is really very, very accurate. But it's not complete, and it's not whole. Right? It's real, but it's not the truth. And it turns out that I probably, again, as a student like you of history and of trying to understand and of keeping an open mind and ear, I probably have one of the best vantage points of what really happened and how it all kind of came together. And so I was over at Claire last year after threatening and joking about this for the last 20 years. And again, I was running my lip and it's just a bunch of sound guys. And I was joking about how everybody hates everybody else or talks so much trash. And Marty's like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? I don't hate anybody. I don't talk trash about anybody. And Marty talks more trash about everybody than anybody else combined. Okay. And I'm like, yeah, Marty, you're right. You don't talk trash about anybody, but everybody talks a lot of trash about you. which I thought was hilarious, Chris. But I think I hurt Marty's feelings. So Marty, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings with that one. But it was funny. And as it would happen, right then and there, all of our friends from Shure put their arm around me and they're like, yeah, you got something. Whatever you need, let me know. We'll back this and make it come to life. Because I think they just wanted to kick Marty a little bit too, right? So So I was laughing about that. I was laughing about that again, but I still didn't really think I was going to do anything with it. And then NAMM calls me up and they're like, hey, we want you to do the keynote. And I was like, yeah, I wasn't really going to go to NAMM. And they're like, no, but we really want you to do the keynote. It's a little silly. Like, we've got one of your videos, one of your talks from last year on homepage. And so I threw it out as a polite way to say no. I was like, I'll do it if you could get me a quiet room where I can film a treatment, just to see if I have anything here. Because in my mind, when we're talking back and forth here, it sounds like a story, right? But that doesn't mean I'm going to, it can actually translate or be universal. I don't want to tell a documentary a very therapeutic he said, she said documentary. I want to tell a proper Hollywood King of Kong, Fistful of Dollars documentary, right? And to really capture all of this.
And so something, I wasn't sure if it, something for more than just an audio engineer to consume.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Because if a tree falls in the woods and no one hears it, does it really matter, right? Like, this is a real story that deserves to be heard and told from everybody. And as you really think about the story, it's not about who invented in-ears at all. It is a love letter to the people who make concerts happen, right? To the unsung heroes behind the scenes. And more than that, it is a love letter to monitor engineers in specific. And larger than that, it is about the people who support the monitor engineers and take care of them throughout their career. And to me, that is a story that needs to be told. And I think, like Penn and Teller deconstructing a trick, general concert goers who don't understand any of this, don't know what monitor world is, don't know what sound guys do, the more that they hear and see this, the more that they fall in love with the illusion of what a show is, and the more that they enjoy their time spent there and understand the sheer amount of work, effort, skill, and human power that it takes to put the shows together. So NAMM agrees. They give me a room. All the manufacturers are there. And like clockwork, nobody said anything negative about anybody else in the video. like it wasn't just sitting in front of the mic. Like, let's be honest about it. I had a professional camera crew, the director of photography, you know, some of the actual heaviest hitters in the room were the people behind the scenes running the day. And it's a little intimidating. We all work behind the scenes for a reason, right? We're a couple steps back from the spotlight for a reason. And it's not in any of our personality to be in front of the camera with the spotlight on. And the minute it happened, everybody's deer in a headlight and everybody got the history right, but none of the emotion, which is really quite funny about it. So
that's interesting.
But it was enough. There was enough juice there. There was enough goods there. There was enough of the storytelling. And I don't know if you caught this, but we had Herman from Colombia who was there, who just wanted to do it in Spanish. And then we had Moto from MSI in Japan, who did it half in English and half in Japanese.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And it was awesome. And it speaks to the global impact that this trade has had, right? And I love it. I love the code shifting and the largeness of it all and the impact that this little tiny industry has had on such a global level. And so lastly, you had asked how Waz was there. And it turns out that he has always been a fan of technology, of what is new, what is happening, where things move and where things drive. And he is not just a lover of music, but he is also a musician himself. He is known for going to NAMM every year to see the innovations and to see what is new. And so I just reached out and asked if he would like to be able to sit and hear some history and parts of the story that he probably didn't know. And he responded almost instantaneously and took it for the gift and the joy that it was. And he was a phenomenal sport because that room was so miserably cold and he stayed there. Steve and his wife were gracious enough to stay there all day listening to all of us talk shop and inside baseball. And I couldn't be happier with the way it all turned out.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was, I only got to see you interview maybe two or three most, outside of myself. So I didn't get to see too much of it. You know, we're all rather busy at NAMM. It was fun. It's one of those things. Like, again, I know, you obviously struggled at times to maybe try to get the right question to pull something out of someone, or that they maybe had a hard time translating for you, or translating out of you. And it's especially when you're not used to talking about this stuff in that way. I liked what you said about you had a hard time pulling the emotion. Like, it's one thing to pull facts. That's another thing to pull the emotion out. And that there's a two-way street of art there, on your side or whoever's side is like trying to pull it out of people, and or just having someone be able to like go there. But the problem is, like, you sit someone down, you want them there instantly. It probably takes some time to actually get there, you know. You probably have realized that now. Maybe that's how you can carry forward in the future with these is like figure out how to like relax the conversation or relax things ahead of time and then sneak it in or something. I don't know.
So there was a little showbiz trick that we started to play after you actually, but when we say the first cut, everything is still rolling, and then all the guard comes down, and then we ask a couple more questions, and then all of a sudden the whole thing has turned around and the gold comes out, and then cut camera really is we're done. And so Chris, I can't wait to tell you and your audience more about this. It's an all-star cast, not just of all the manufacturers, but of all the top touring sound engineers and everybody who's gone into it. We went back to LA to do a second pickup shoot recently. Bud Thornton wanted to share a tribute of how he uses in-ear monitors and why they are meaningful to him. We might not really think about this and we don't realize, but before he was an Academy Award-winning director, he was a sound guy, right? He really came up through the ranks that way, worked his way up to monitor engineer. And so he's not just a performer, but is someone who intimately understands the use case and the needs, what it takes to deliver a show from all aspects. And so I'm really excited about this project. There'll be a lot more that I'll be sharing with the community soon. We're going to have one or two more takes as we move into edits. And I think we capture the human element. And I think we really share not just who invented the in-ear monitor, but why it matters and a lot of the human element behind it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it's, what I noticed quickly is the how it impacts people or the effects of it is way deeper than the surface. Like we said in the beginning, like this, you know, most people's instinct is, well, why do they have in-ear monitors? Well, to save our hearing, you know, like, well, that's only like a single thread in the grand scheme of it and or the impacts that it's had. So yeah, it's fascinating to see how many storylines or threads are going to come together on that.
And it turns out to be quite a surprising ending, right? You think that I told you, I know what I believe to be a lot of the points of the truth, but even in trying to do this research and to sit everybody down and to listen, there's so many different angles that uncover it. To me, it is a very global hero's journey type story. And I'm excited for everybody to get to hear it and see it. And when they're using AirPods and consuming music in the way that they are now, and when they're going to shows, to understand all the people involved that made this come about and happen, again, I think it makes it that much more exciting.
Yeah. And I mean, we're just entering the space of spatial. You know, spatial audio, right? And so that's the whole next phase of this thing, you know, that is bred. It wouldn't spatialization, at least from a stage perspective, you know, would not be possible if it wasn't for, and I guess on the consumer side too, to a degree. But I mean, you know, specifically speaking to our industry, I mean, that's still, even though it's been out for quite a few years, it's still just barely catching on, quite frankly.
Just barely catching on. Chris, I want to pick your brain from what you do and with the vantage point that you have and what you see this developing into. What are the current trends now that Atmos has become a standard? You're hearing it when you're consuming music and now it's moving back onto stage. What do you see and where do you think this is going?
It's tough. So, you know, I am somewhat removed from the touring side of things in that I don't actively tour. However, I'm connected enough that I see things. So I have a little bit of disadvantage in not being in it fully daily. However, my observations would be that I feel like every year or even every month, I see more and more tours talking about immersive in-ears on stage. You know, look, the most predominant being Klang. Right. But obviously there's other ways of doing it, but let's just face it. It's the predominant way of doing it from an in-ear standpoint currently.
And Klang being incorporated into the Digico boards was a huge enabler of that. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the artists some artists have recognized, I think we're still in a phase where people who we've moved past, it's a gimmick, right? So I think when that stuff first comes out, like it's kind of a gimmick, and oh my goodness, ooh, I can take this thing and I can spit it around your head. Well, that's not practical. It's fun. That's not practical, right? So I think artists and engineers are both still in the infancy of learning how to get its most effective use. And I think we're probably going to be in the same phase where, you know, we kind of talked about this, of that a lot of artists, their first time into in-ears, it wasn't a good experience because they didn't have a good engineer getting them to where they need to be. Probably going to be a second phase of that here now where, you know, artists' first experience on immersive may not be the best experience, and it may put them off because they need the right person who knows how to mix in, immersive things. Same thing goes with just even the stories I've heard of mixing in Atmos or whatever immersive studio environments for home theaters and all that. Like, you know, it's a completely different mixing style. Like, not everyone can, just because you can mix a left right record doesn't mean you can go in and make a 5-1 mix and have it be just as mind blowing. It's two different arts. So I think that's the next phase. I think we're in that infancy of people just learning what's possible, what works, what doesn't work, and just trying to make that repeatable. Specifically on the in-ear side. And then the immersive side from a loudspeaker standpoint is a whole nother, ball game of practicality or viability, all those things. People have lots of opinions. That was the funny thing about going to Infocom this year. There almost wasn't a speaker demo room that didn't have an immersive setup, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least the 5-6 demo rooms that I went into, all of them had a immersive spatialization, whatever you want to call the buzzword of it was. So that's definitely the trend, that if you're not doing that, you're behind the curve or not relevant currently. So yeah,
I mean, I'm really excited about this. Again, as a microphone manufacturer, I think it's interesting. As a mixer, it's got to be interesting how you make something louder, more present, bigger, how you can expand it to fit. Like, I mean, think about what you can do with a drum kit, how big mm-hmm. you can place that drum and where you make it sound. Like you said, I think it's very, very early and time will tell, but I think, like you said, it's past the fad stage.
Yeah. To me, the next phase of it would be the VR world, right? So because you can taking it out of having someone to have, a 7-1 whatever system within their living room, more and more, the VR world is going to rely on 2-channel immersive, not 7-channel immersive. And so going back to your consumer conversation, that's the thread that's going to pass over there, and people have to be able to deliver that experience that's going to carry that as well.
And again, that kind of brings home the whole theme of what we've been talking about, what works on stage, what's developed in that fire, and how it translates universally to consumer electronics and to the experiences that everybody has in their day to day. It's the exact same thing.
Like, sorry, I just had an idea. Like, and I'm sure people are already thinking about this, but like, you can give people, you could sell people or give people whatever, 4 different ways to view a show. You could mix the show in immersive from sitting at each player on stage, and it's going to be a different mix from sitting each player or at front of house, balcony. Like, you can choose where to experience that. Or I want to walk on stage, and all of a sudden that immersive mix changes when you go in there from a VR standpoint. So like, all from one experience. So you've now enabled the consumer to have a completely different experience with this band that, you know, for some people has saved their life, if you will. You know what I mean? For lack of better terms, between their music and the translation, you have this now intimate experience that you can't even pay to have that experience and go on like a show. We all know that the worst place to see a show is on the stage or side stage, but not anymore. One of the things that, some people didn't like, but like through the pandemic, all these bands went in and did these, live sessions or whatever, in a pre-built studio or in a venue. And it was a very intimate setting, and they got these cameras up in their face or whatever. And some of the bands like I listened to who did this, like, if you did it well and not cheesy, they're like, this is the most raw you can ever experience. As you can't ever get this experience even in real life, right? So that's the emotion that they brought to the table and the auditory. And that was all the most of the stuff we listened to during the pandemic. That was all stereo. Imagine taking that one step further into immersive. I mean, that's just a whole nother level.
Yeah, I think it's a phenomenal frontier and that we're right at the beginning of it right now. I couldn't be more excited about it. So Chris, I have another question. So, and you just touched on this.
I like when the tables flip and the conversations, the questions come at me. I like it.
I think it's I don't get to talk to experts every day. So I want to ask this one.
I'll go find one for you.
You talk about music saving people's lives. And so I want to just kind of take two steps back and ask you, what is it that translates and connects? Like, what is it about music that is able to do that through time and space? I have my own thoughts and I want to talk about it a little bit, but are you on your 500th show? What did I just see the other day?
Like episode of this?
Yeah.
This is 213 or something like that.
Oh, that's not even dyslexia. I'm just way off. Okay, but still, you had a chance to talk to 200 plus people.
That's a lot.
Yeah, about this. And this is what this is the root and the heart of it all.
So your original question being, how do I think music?
Yeah, what is it? What connects? What translates? Like what bridges time and space?
Yeah, I'm sure for different people it's different. I think the two things that I think would be most. I think number one thing for most people would be lyrically. While I think there is something in humans that interacts with music that physically moves them, that I don't even know if science can even explain that emotional connection of vibrations, if you will, or whatever that moves things in our brains that causes us to react emotionally to music. But I think I would venture to guess more people are more reactive to the lyrics that they can identify with, whether it's a season in life or it's a story or whatever. So I think, but then I think the ultimate is when you obviously combine the two, which is obviously the art of music in and of itself, right? When you can invoke emotion via music and lyrics combined. So, and I think the other thing with this would be most often it happens when a particular point in your life. And for most people, that's in like your late teens, early 20s, the most impressionable part of your life. Whatever stage of life you're in and whatever music that is creating the soundtrack during that time, that often carries you to that time. That to me is that emotional connection and why everyone's so nostalgic to go back to that period of time and always thinks that that time of music that came out for them is what resonates most with them, no matter how old you get. That's why it's so hard for people to get attached to new music, is because you're stuck in that most impressionable time of your life in the connection to music at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. Spot on. There's nothing that feels or hits the same way as when I listen to music from 16 to 20 something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's actually a term for it. We actually, Kyle and I talked about this on Loose Connection. And I forget what the term for it is. There's that term for that impressionable period there's a specific psychological term for it that I can't come off the top of my head. But the other thing on music, though, there's two different experiences with music, in that like there's the home consumption of music and what that does for you on a daily basis, and the live consumption of music are two different things. Often one is married to the other, but I would say from a live sound perspective, being a part of a collective, being responsible for moving a collective body of people in an experience, regardless of whether it's even the music that you like or would daily listen to or whatever, being a part of that is a whole nother level of experience that just me consuming music would never give me. Most people tour on tours or do shows with bands they would never regularly listen to. Yet the experience that they still are able to give, receive, and partake in and be a part of through all that, is still better than most of the times anything they could ever consume on their own.
I think that's a fascinating way to think about that. And well said, too. Yeah.
If we did a poll of people, touring engineers, of like, what's the percentage of tours that you've actually would daily consume the music that you toured with, I'm willing to bet that number percentage is pretty low.
And it doesn't matter. They're still moved and swept in the energy and the focus of the collective body of movement. Yep.
And not just audio engineers. It could be lighting. It could be video. Yeah. It could be whatever. I mean, you know, you figure, I mean, like in the stadium tours, you got crews of, you know, 50 plus some people, you know, just because you're out on tour with Taylor Swift doesn't mean you're bumping Taylor Swift when you get home. You know what I mean? Let's be honest, right? So, but that doesn't mean like, you know, I think almost every artist that I toured with, I would have never listened to or hadn't listened to before I toured with them.
Yeah.
And now they become daily rotations for me. And then there's even artists within those things that just for example, you know, I toured with Tears for Fears. Hadn't really listened to them before I toured with them. Didn't really know much of their music. Toured with them. I fell in love with their music because of you got to hear the connections of the stories behind it, all these things, and just the people. There's a whole other level of connection there. However, if I try to listen to other things in that same genre, like Duran Duran or other things in that same, can't stand it. Don't like it. I don't like 80s synth pop. The only thing I actually like is Tears for Fears. But it's because of the connection that I had on those tours.
Right. You're able to override that and imprint again at a later point in life where even though you didn't have it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of dovetails to what I had this weird notion, and it felt like a light bulb turning on. I don't know if it's right or not, but to me, and because I talk about this a lot and I think about this a lot, to me, what transcends and translates about music is the emotion of loneliness, of one person reaching out and another person receiving, right? Or connecting. And there's such a lack of connection in this world and everybody's daily that to go to a show and to be part of something and to experience collectively, I do. I think that's something very powerful and something that's really sorely lacking in society. Like, look, I talk about why people don't like networking, and I get paid really well to coach and to talk about networking. And it's the silliest thing in the world because networking is just another way for making friends, right? And I can't talk about loneliness because nobody wants to hear that, or how to overcome loneliness because that's one of the taboos in society. But if you couch it in a business term, like how to network effectively at trade shows, is really the same thing as how to just make friends as an adult when you don't have those things.
It's true.
Yeah, of course it's true. But to me, that's what music bridges and brings and lets you tap into and feel.
Mm.
And I think that's what touring is too.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's, some people feel, you know, that you feel more attached to your road life and road friends and family than you do any, you know, air quotes reality that's may or may not be at home.
Yeah. Again, it's not just the level of time but it's the energy and it's those impressions that you're talking about, those shared experiences, those shared common bonds. Those are hard to have. Like, when do you go and hang out with just random people when you're not working?
At this stage in life, I don't.
Yeah.
Random people? No, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's kids or in family and work. That's it. It's really hard to make friends.
Mm-hmm. So what, let's circle back to, IAMITO. What is IAMITO?
So IAMITO stands for In-Ear Monitor International Trade Organization. And when I left Ultimate Ears, and I have nothing but absolute love for the company, I left for family reasons. My wife and daughter desperately wanted to be back East, and I didn't think it was fair to the team to do that remotely. That was before the world changed, of course. Jokes on me.
One more year. No, I'm just kidding.
So when I left, when most of the manufacturers started hearing about it, everyone's like, oh, who are you coming over here? And I was like, no, I don't. I'm good. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. It's too soon and it doesn't make sense. But then everybody started saying, once they realized I wasn't jumping sideways, well, why don't you start a trade organization? We're big enough and there should be a sort of a consortium that promotes the uses and benefit of in-ears for everyone. I was like, well, let me think about that. I'm interested, but I'm interested in two, I will do it, but under two stipulations. One, I want to make sure that we make sound engineers, monitor engineers, specifically the center of this, because they're the ones who are responsible for all of it. So if we're not putting sound engineers first, I have no interest in doing it. And two, if it is not global in scope, then I'm not interested in doing it either, because we had one person initially talking about making the trade consortium to fight the Chinese. And I said, dude, if that's your worry and your business model has more holes than a trade organization is going to give you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it made sense. And then there was a little bit of prisoner's dilemma, a little gamesmanship, I think. If so-and-so joins, then everybody joins. And if nobody joins, nobody joins.
Mm.
But again, going back to the same thing that we started talking about, I do have a reputation for always advocating for the industry, not for the manufacturer that employs me. And without blinking, everybody joined instantly. And I found myself.
Can we stop there 1 second? Hold on. That phrase of having the history of advocation. Where did that start? What was that rooted in? How did that become part of your life?
That's a great question, Chris. Give me a second. I've never been asked that. I think it's because I fundamentally don't care. And I mean that in the most kind way, because I care about the people doing it. I care about the sound engineers, right? I care about the people that I get to help. I don't necessarily care about which company is doing what. Right, I have an outsider's vantage point to all of this, and so I don't have any skin in the game. I have everything I already need. I have my hobbies. I have my family. I have my life. I'm really content, and so I get to do what I want to do, and I'm not paid to shill for one particular company or another. Yeah, okay. that's where I actually think it comes from.
That's good.
And I think that comes across. Right. Everybody is like, oh, this dude doesn't know what he's talking. Yeah. Like, he doesn't really know what he's talking about, but he's not wrong.
anyone who has had, even the remote chance of a conversation with you, I think would trust and believe that you care. Just even like when you and I started reaching out, like it was very apparent that you actually cared to interact with me. Mm-hmm. You were not obligated to, didn't have a choice to. We spent hours on phone calls. It's not necessary. And at no point, like, you were very clear in the beginning. While you worked for Earthworks at the time, or still do it. It's like, this is not a sales call. We're just talking about the industry and this, that. You know what I mean? I can attest that that's very real and genuine.
Thank you. Well, I also have a belief that they're all tools, right? You mm-hmm. are all professionals and you can make any tool work. It's kind of end stop right there. Yeah. The reason you choose to use a certain microphone or a certain in-ear is familiarity, comfort, use case, ease, but also a lot of it has to do with the negative connotations of why you choose to not work with some manufacturer more than the positives of another, meaning somebody screwed up and somebody dropped the ball. And so if nobody has screwed up and nobody's dropped the ball, there is no reason whatsoever to try to Red Rover, Red Rover, sit Chris on over.
Right.
You're already taken care of and happy.
Because, and then I know we've been talking specifically about the in-ear side of the world, but I mean, we talk about it all the time from a loudspeaker standpoint, is that at the end of the day, in this day and age, everybody makes a good speaker. Let's just call it, you know what I mean? Some make slightly better, some make slightly worse. But at the end of the day, I mean, the bar is pretty straight, pretty level between them. At like, you know, it comes down to personal relationships and convenience and those types of things. Not necessarily, oh my God, X brand, you know, is so much more worse or better than X other brand. And I think it holds true down to in-ear monitors. And it might not always been that way. Definitely wasn't all the ways in speakers and or consoles, but we're definitely at a point where the playing field is so level on a scale, you know. So
So level and so saturated. And I think this is true across the board for everything. And again, you are so good at what you do, you could make any system work.
Yeah.
Like that's what you're paid to do.
I'll say that's our job. Yeah, that's exactly our job. it's 100% our job.
It's great that you can make, you know, all the best gear in the world sound perfect. Yeah, really? Okay. But that's not the gig, right? And that's not how you cut your teeth either. So that's how I think about it. And so being able to work with all the manufacturers, because they all, I told you, they all don't like each other, but they all are exactly the same person, which is the funniest part about it, right? They have more in common with each other than they do with any other person on this planet. Right? They've all spent their entire lives and passions and careers helping this industry grow. And I think that's pretty wild. And I'm fortunate enough to be in a wonderful place in life where I was really able to give back to the community that gave my family so much. And IMEDO made a lot of sense. It started with a bang. I was in London right after it formed, speaking at Future Source on in-ear monitors and all of these things that we're talking about. And then the pandemic hit instantly. And then I went through the same crisis that everybody else did, that I chose wrongly and poorly in every life decision that led up to that point. And then I put my big boy pants back on and just got on with everything, just like everybody else.
So what do you hope to do with IMEDO?
I see IMEDO as being a repository of information, unbiased information that helps consumers find what they're looking for and choose a flavor that helps them perform better, perform with more confidence, find what they need or be able to take those next steps, right? Because again, if everything is at the level, then the only way you're getting someone is through marketing material that may or may not be 100% accurate, or by slagging another brand, which may or may not be accurate. And so having a third party, a neutral place that represents best practices and how to use and why, rather than any individual need, to me that makes a lot of sense.
It does, and it goes with a thread of things we've talked about of just ethics and manufacturers within our industry, right? And so I mean, you're taking this on from one point of our industry. I'd be curious to see, like, what are some of your thoughts in terms of our industry as a whole? And you know, you've been in marketing for over 20 years now at this point in our industry within manufacturing. What has that tale of ethics looked like within our industry? And I'm not asking you to like call names out. I'm just saying, like, do you feel like there's maybe been a trend to being more ethical or not? Or what are some of those patterns that you've seen through the years or experienced?
Well, the good news is that we're all quite a cynical bunch, aren't we? Right. And so manufacturers that are selling to experts, right? We're talking on the pro side, not on the consumer side as much.
Sure. Yep.
It is hard to just speak marketing and have anybody take you seriously or care. So that's the plus, right? The other part is that the products speak for themselves. And if the products aren't good, like a show, like this is why I love show business, you know instantly if it's a hit or if you're not selling seats. And you can't fake that. You can fake that to consumers, but you can't fake that to pros. And so to me, that's another aspect of Iamedo. We function a bit as a highly effective bat cave for the industry. If a sound engineer needs to get in touch with the manufacturer, perhaps the contact at the manufacturer has moved on. Perhaps there was a slight or a rub or something had broken in the past. Iamedo is a very nice mediator of bridging things and putting them back together. Also, when a manufacturer needs to collaborate with another manufacturer, but doesn't feel like directly asking, then Iamedo serves as a bridge from an industry standpoint to be able to make some of these things happen. A great use case is Dr. Santucci has been working on one of the most amazing tools for our industry. I'd like to say it's coming out soon. It may have already come out. I haven't followed. I know he's been working on this for a very long time, and he was very, very close when I spoke with him last at NAMM. But it is his DB checker. And It is one thing to be able to monitor on stage what your sound pressure levels are. It is another thing completely to measure what's in your ear when you're using in-ear monitors and what you're hearing in your exposure levels. Dr. Santucci has calibrated a tool using everybody's sound signature and sound pressure levels for exposure for what artists are experiencing. Could he have done that without Iamedo's help? Probably. Was Iamedo present and held multiple meetings where he was able to speak and share his ideas with people? Did that matter? Did that help move the needle a little bit? I like to think so.
Yeah.
And
that's pretty cool.
As we talked about it, with in-ears being the center of the global headphone revolution, when some of the larger consumer electronic companies move into the space and they want to play or know or be part of, Iamedo is sort of the way to make this all work. I don't know if you caught that Razer just launched their first in-ear monitor for gamers. This would never have happened 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Would you, a gaming company creating their own in-ear for their own customer base?
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. I'm anxious to see the continual thread is going back to what we said earlier of like how one industry is affecting the other and vice versa for sure.
Yeah. So that's how I see Iamedo. It is not a viable business model. It, especially after the pandemic, everything changed. I do it because I love the business and it lets it, if it wasn't me, I don't know who would be doing it.
Yeah, that's fair. I think a lot of people within our industry who are doing a lot of good could say the same thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think the other side too is like, if it was easy to do, it would already be done or be doing better or whatever, right? So like, I think that's me trying to give you some credit of that. Like, while this is a labor of love right now, and the future is to be told on it, like, you know, if this was easy to do, whatever it is that you're doing, someone else would have already done it, and doing it better or more or whatever. So, so there's a lot of little things like that.
Thank you, Chris. Again, I always think that there's more I can do, but the reality is there's only so many hours in the day. I try to do my best.
Tell me about it. I try to hustle through different podcasts. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, please.
No. I was just going to ramble. Like, trust me, I've been trying for 2 years now to restart How We Got Loud, and it just hasn't happened, so...
No, it's a miracle that anything ever gets done or completed. Really, again, this is our way of acknowledging, recognizing, and giving, you know, shining the spotlight onto the sound engineers that make all this happen. At the root of all of this, we all love music. We all love going to shows for the reasons that you talked about and just being part of this. And none of this would happen if it wasn't for the sound team and for the dedication of the people behind the boards.
It's true.
Yeah.
So what's something you know now that you wish you knew when you first started?
Well, if I had a time machine, I would hop in happily, go back and talk to my young self and say, dude, you should just sell insurance. And I can say that completely straight face because I also know that young me, who's not gray and fat and old, would have looked at me like a queen and just popped me in the face and just done exactly what I ended up doing anyway. But that's that. I've got a good, healthy, happy life. It all worked out. But I don't think that the music business is for everybody.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
So you mentioned in your short bio that you sent me that you love to tell trade stories. So hit me. There's got to be a story of going to a show, experiencing something, seeing Jerry pissed off. I don't know. Somewhere in the middle there, there's probably, you know, a fun story. That what's your ultimate go to party story of like, have I got a story for you?
Yeah. So
that you can tell publicly. No. Yeah.
So Jerry's left hand, right? Jerry is a savant, and when he first started, when they first started, it was a partnership with Westone, and Westone was the manufacturer for Ultimate Ears design. And then Jerry goes, he knows he needs to make his own lab, and he knows he needs somebody to run the lab and make the lab. And so he goes and signs up for a hearing aid class down in Florida. And he shows up and he pulls the professor aside a few days into it. And he's like, hey, I'm not really an audiologist. And the guy's like, yeah, dude, we all know. He's like, no. I make in-ear monitors for rock stars. Do you want to come and work with me? And the guy's like, no, man, I'm running this place. Like, why would I want to come and work for you? But eventually he does. And he became my number one. He's Noi Soldati is one of the greatest people in this industry that nobody knows about or talks about. And the amount of joy and fun and laughs that I've had a chance to share with Noi over the years. Noi lighting me on fire, peeing on my foot. It doesn't matter. Like a million great times.
Was that to put out the fire or was there two different stories?
I hope they're two different stories, okay. But it's all a little blurry. But no, there are some wonderful, wonderful people in this industry. And most of your guests listening will have their own stories of some good times we've all had and shared together.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, if you could define your legacy or how you'd want to be known, how would you define that?
I would like to be known as a great father to my family, to my daughter and to our son, and a good husband to my wife, and a good friend to everybody that I'm lucky enough to run with. Yeah. That's nice. The whole point of it all, isn't it? Like, why else do we do this?
Absolutely. No, this industry is made up of friends until they're not, but yes, mostly friends.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to make that go south, but that went south really quick.
I threw you with my time machine insurance statement. You're still recovering.
Oh, geez. Awesome. Well, Mike, I appreciate you hanging out and talking. And I'm sure there's many more things we could talk about. I wanted to hit on the networking thing, but I'll tell you what, you have many other videos and articles and all those things on networking. I'll make sure I drop some links down in the description for you guys to go check those things out. And it's probably better than, you know, us kind of rambling on now, and you have some more organized time to speak those within those articles or videos. So
I would appreciate that. It is. That's just another way that I really like to give back. And it turns out when I've told you a little bit about my history and when I started and how I got to do this. And it turns out that I was very good at net drinking, but not so good at networking, and starting to understand the difference between the two, and starting to understand how it was that I was able to put together the deals that I was able to do, and how it was I was able to create and manifest. I realized that it really is just about the people you surround yourself with and the teams that you build and the favors that you give and the favors that you're owed. And as I, like everybody else, I mean, you come up at the same time as I continued to get promoted and then start training people, it became apparent that I had sparks or ideas of something, but I wasn't exactly sure how to codify or translate it to people. So I really took the time to think about it and to write it down and to understand so that I could teach others. And once I, Chris, this is the great part. Once I did it and really understood, it was like decoding the matrix. I was like, oh, well, let me actually try that, like try to do that with intention. Mm-hmm. And then I learned I could put any single deal together. Like we joke about like why Wasp was there. Like, why wouldn't he be? Like, I made a call. Right. Like you can do anything you want if you understand that nothing gets done in a vacuum by yourself. Everything gets done because of who you know and who you can lean on and the people that are around with the same mutual interest that you have. And to me, all of that is short code for networking. Networking means that the term networking feels so swarmy and used car salesman until you flip it around and you realize that networking is about what you give, not what you take. And if you live your life like that, then everything else has a lot of value and a lot of meaning. So I'd appreciate it if you shared those links with everybody, because I think there's a lot there.
It's funny what you just said, the value of what you give versus what you take. I was thinking the whole time, you know, when you said, you know, yeah, you spent all this time in, you know, marketing and yet you spent time, you know, teaching networking, teaching something that's, you know, completely out of the lane. It has to do with what you do, but I'm like, you're providing another resource to people outside of what it is you do on a daily. And one of the things that I've noticed about the best people, specifically with our industry, but this problem sure is outside of our industry as well, is that our people who give back or to or do something of value outside of their normal lane. And that's often the connecting point more than what, you know, just like, for example, like what, you know, what Jeff Hawley does with Allen Heath. He's the director of marketing or VP marketing or whatever his title is there is. I apologize, Jeff. but like the whole philosophy side of things, you're right. He has a PhD in philosophy and he writes articles on it, whatever. Or, you know, you doing this or just an example. There's a person who works for a labor couriering company. And one of the things they do all the time on LinkedIn is they share stories about how to use AI and they have like step-by-step guides and got like, they're giving, like it's has nothing to do with their industry, yet you're still providing value for people. And that's something I've really noticed over the past couple of years. That's frankly, that's kind of what, you know, I do here or we do here at Signals of Noise and how we got out. Like, this isn't my day gig, right? Like, you know, like yep. I found an avenue to pour passion into something and give back to other people. And I think I've noticed that other people who do that are really successful.
I think so too, especially when you define success in the terms of happiness and fulfillment.
Yes.
And for me, when we touch upon the idea of loneliness, or the flip side of it is fullness and friendship and community. Again, there's more to life than just work, and being able to have the healthy balance of the why we do it, right? For who we're doing it for, and the joy that we get to give to others, receive for others. Because look, it's really easy to be there for people when things are on the up. Mm. But we'll end it with this. I challenge each of us who are listening and part of this larger community that we're all lucky enough to be part about. Do we show up for those when they need us the most? Are we there for our friends when they're down? Right? Like, mm-hmm. Are you picking up the phone when your friend gets fired and calling up and congratulating them and being there and be like, oh, no. Are you there when your friend gets divorced or when there is a death? Because honestly, that's what matters, right? It's really, yep. really, really easy to be there for people on a surface level. It's really hard to be there for people on a human level.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of friends in this industry who are doing God's work. Paul and Courtney, we're shouting out to you guys. And they're tapping into that and doing the hard work that we all can do for each other.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah.
Chris, thank you so much for this opportunity. Thank you to your sponsors. Again, thank you to all your listeners, and thank you for everything that you and your teammates do for the industry. It matters. We all listen and we all really get a lot out of this. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.